We have two cases on the calendar this morning, one from a district court and a veterans appeal that's submitted on the briefs and will not be argued. Our only argued case is 2021-1052, Monument Peak Ventures versus Toshiba America. Mr. Edmonds. Whoops. That is a problem. That ought to be fixed. Please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Monument Peak Ventures. I'm going to refer to them as MPV for short. And this opinion by the district court should be reversed for five fundamental reasons. The first reason is that MPV's second amended complaint had specific, non-conclusory, plausible factual details about technical problems, technical solutions to those problems, inventive concepts, the unconventionality of those solutions, and how human processes weren't automated. Those facts should have been credited by the district court on a Rule 12 motion. This is on a Rule 12b motion.
We can read the claims.
Yeah.
And they talk about transferring images, storing them, deleting them. It looks all abstract.
Are you referring to a particular patent, Your Honor? Which would you prefer? Want me to address
well,
that remark?
All of them.
Okay. Well, that's about the opinion we got from the district court in the sense that the district court did not really look at the limitations. It talked about the patents and it didn't dig into the limitations. So I'll start with the 064 and the 095, which we'll discuss together.
Well, he talked about the claims. He didn't talk about just the patent. He did talk about the claims, and he called them representative claims. Now, you may sort of take a little issue with that, but he talked about the claims, not just the patents, right?
The district court talked about representative claims, but in his actual Alice Step 1 and Step 2 analysis, he just referred to the patent. In each instance, he just referred to the patent, and he drew a generalization of the patent, and that's what he used as his benchmark for 101, not the claims. That's just not simply what his analysis bears out.
From I hear you talking, sir, but from my perspective, at least since 1985, in this court, the understanding has been that we pass on judgments, not on opinions. And so the fact that the judge might not have said the word claim when he's talking about what he finds to be the abstract idea, he clearly has looked at a representative claim in his opinion. And I realize that you've made some arguments that you think that he chose the wrong representative claim, but that's a different issue from whether or not the representative claim is sufficient to allow us to review what the judge's decision, as opposed to his opinion, was with respect to whether the representative claim was drawn to an abstract idea.
That speaks to the issue, and we raised the real-time data case in particular, that in our view, the district court didn't provide a reviewable opinion.
Right. Well, it's clearly, too, that we've had on several times have expounded on the fact that we need to have a decision that we can effectively review. And when you combine that notion with the notion that we're more concerned with the correctness of the decision as opposed to perhaps some words in an opinion, what we then do is look at the entire record. And in a case where there's a judgment based on the pleadings, we look at the arguments that were made in the opposing briefs. And I went back and read the briefs that were supplied by you and your adversary to the judge. And each of those briefs had extensive discussion of the case law you had your view of what you cases that you selected you believe supported your point of view as to why the representative claims weren't drawn to abstract ideas, and your adversary looked at other cases and cited specific language from those cases. So we have a body of material that was before the district court judge, and we know from his decision that he found your adversary's arguments more convincing as to whether or not these claims are drawn to abstract ideas. It seems maybe you can correct me or guide me helpfully to your cause, to your side, but it seems to me our first task is to decide whether we have enough information in front of us to review the judge's decision that each of the representative claims were drawn in each patent were drawn to abstract ideas. And if so, did the judge formulate the correct abstract idea? And if the answer to that is yes, from our point of view, then you move to step two of Alice.
So I
want to sort of see where the gravamen of your argument is.
Well, I think the gravamen of our argument is that the claims were wrongly invalidated or found patent ineligible. And so if the court feels like it has enough from the record to do its own de novo review, then we should talk about the merits and I'm fine moving on to that and start talking about each of these
patents. I'm trying to be helpful to you and sort of frame it because you've got, five patents here, although the 064 and the 095 look like they're pretty much the same. I mean, you started with the 064 and the 095. The 064, the judge said this is an abstract method for file management. You could also look at the claims as saying what it's doing is storing, transferring, and deleting images. And so I asked you why is a method for file management, which is basically storing, transferring, and deleting images, why isn't that an abstract idea under our precedent that deals with information transfer, storing, modulating information? And we have manifold cases cited by your adversary that say we treat those kinds of claims as drawn to abstract ideas.
Well, the question, so you're asking, I think, about Alice step one.
That's where we're talking.
Right. So with respect to Alice step one, what the court should consider is that this provides a technical solution to a technical problem. And the technical solution is that the camera itself keeps track of which images have been successfully transferred. And that juxtaposes...
But we look at claims, and we look at claim language. And if each of the operative words in the claims reflects an abstract idea, then isn't that conclusive?
No, I think that this court would ask if it provides a specific technical solution to a technical problem, then it should pass step one. I mean, all claims, if we reduce
them to
high enough level, you could say it's an abstract idea, but that's not the final question.
In all of these cases that deal with data, massaging data, in all the cases in which we have found them to be drawn to an abstract idea, the same argument could be made that they were solving a technical solution. I mean, that's inherent in what they're doing. To be sure, if you are capturing images in the in the card, you take a picture and you capture that image in the card, that's solving a technical problem. How do you take a picture digitally, and then how do you find the image that goes somewhere that it can be transferred and manipulated?
Well,
so all of these cases, unless I'm mistaken, I went back and looked at the core of the cases cited by your adversary. All those cases involve practical solutions to problems that have a technical character, partly because you're using a computer to drive the solution to the problem.
Yeah.
It seems to me that your emphasis on the technical aspects, the solution, the problem is, in my judgment, more properly advanced at step two of Alice, where you would be trying to say, even if the claim is drawn to an abstract idea, something unusual, out of the ordinary, exceptional is happening, such as perhaps you are teaching a computer how to perform a new trick.
And we would suggest that the CardioNet and Unilock cases cited in our brief take into account whether it provides a technical improvement, technical solution. But let's focus on step two in the interest of time and a fair suggestion. So with respect to step two, and we're talking about 064, and as you suggested, we can just talk about 064 and 095 in the same conversation. There, the inventive solution, which was unconventional, is that the camera tracks which images have been transferred.
The camera is receiving and storing the image, right?
Correct.
It captures an image in the memory that's on the memory card, right?
Correct.
Okay, that's happening. Is that using anything that isn't off-the-shelf technology?
No, we're not into the claimed invention yet, but no.
Well, I'm taking Representative Claim 8 of the 064 just for example. If you take, that's sort of the way you try to see what's happening technologically. This is at step two.
What's happening technologically, if you look at Figure 4, and this is explained at Appendix 30 and in Column 7, it talks about how an image could be uploaded but not transferred, or it could be uploaded and transferred. And that data
uploaded
is
uploaded from what to what?
It could be transferred. It could be uploaded, but not transferred.
And wait. It's uploaded. The image is in the camera.
No, uploaded somewhere else. Transferred somewhere else outside of the camera.
Wait. The image starts in the camera.
Correct.
You take it, snap a picture with my digital camera, and the image is recorded, you know, on the little disk that's in there, right?
Yes.
Now, where am I going to transfer it to?
You could translate it to the cloud. You could send it to the cloud. You could send it to another device.
I could send it to my computer.
Correct. So
wirelessly, I could send it either to my computer or to a cloud, someplace else where it's going to be stored.
Right. And the camera is tracking whether that transfer has taken place.
Right.
So you can tell from the camera.
The camera can keep track of whether that happened.
Correct.
And doing that, is the camera using anything new and novel? Is the camera using off-the-shelf technology?
No.
Is it all software? Is it all programming?
It is, yes. It is. It is the camera is hardware, so it is programmed hardware. But yes, the camera has been programmed in order to perform this function. Let's move on.
And so the camera keeps track. The camera, I took a picture of you just now, and wirelessly it went to my computer over in my chambers, and either the camera or the computer knows that it got transferred, right?
The camera knows that is new.
And it will keep track over time. And then if I would like to delete everything that's on the disk in the camera, the chip, I can push a button or whatever, and it will empty out the chip to make it free to collect more pictures.
If I want to empty out what's been transferred,
it
now knows what's been transferred, and I can just delete it.
And the beauty of the patent is that all of a sudden, my disk, which was otherwise full, meaning I couldn't take any more pictures, I've used up all the capacity of the disk, I can push a button, or clean the disk, erase it, and start over again.
The benefits are that if I don't have connectivity, I can tell from the camera what I've downloaded or not. I can delete those one at a time. Now I can delete them in mass, which I couldn't do before.
Is the software implementation needed to practice the invention? Isn't that really conventional and within the knowledge of one skilled in the art?
No.
In certain of the patents, it says that right in the spec. I don't recall exactly what it said about the patent we're talking about now, but...
It says that, it makes a statement to that effect in the specification of the 294 patent. It doesn't make a statement to that effect in the specification of any, none of the other patents make that statement. With respect to the 064 that we were just talking about, no, it's not conventional because the patent describes in column one what was conventional, which it could, as you're transferring an image, it might display to show you, hey, this image is being transferred, or you may have this image deletion preference, but the functionality that's claimed is not stated to be conventional. It's juxtaposed against the conventional.
Counsel, your time has expired, but let's hear from the other side, and we'll give you 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Let me take just one more minute, and I'll take it off on the other side because I've only talked about one patent.
All right.
Because I don't want to say I didn't cover it in the opening. With respect to, so we've talked about the 064. For the 294, and I think the case that the court should consider is CellSpin, when CellSpin had a two-step process that was unconventional and was inventive, and that's exactly what we have here. The two-step process is we have a pre-screening process with a rougher algorithm that has higher false positives, and then a second step where you just analyze the windows or the regions that you got from the first step. And there are that's juxtaposed against what's conventional. There are lots of benefits that flow from that in terms of, say, it saves processing and allows you to use other devices to do this that you couldn't do it before. So it conserves processing, but the two-step process itself is enough and has been pledged to be enough to get it passed.
None of which negates the idea that the steps are abstract.
Well, that's, if I'm talking more about, we would say that it passes step one because it has a specific technical improvement, a technical solution, but really when I talk about inventiveness and unconventionality, we're talking about step two. So whether it's abstract or not is a different question than step two.
Let's hear from the other side.
Thank you.
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court.
Can I ask you a preliminary housekeeping question?
Certainly.
Which your friend can disagree with when he gets up on rebuttal, if that's the case. But the way I understand this case is if we were to affirm, hypothetically, on the 101 issues with respect to all the patents, that the issues we raised with respect to willfulness and inducement are moot.
Correct. The remaining patent, the sixth patent that had been asserted, has been dismissed with prejudice per agreement. Your Honors, I would start by addressing the concern, perhaps, that the judge's order was not robust enough, I believe, that Mr. Edmonds raised. And I would say that the conciseness of the judge's opinion is due to the fact that all five of these patents fall squarely within the category of ineligible subject matter, which has been laid out in this court's prior cases.
Well, the court didn't even provide for an oral argument, did it?
No, Your Honor. The court did it on the briefs.
Mm-hmm. And with just almost a one-sentence statement, substantive statement with respect to each patent.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the patents in this case are very squarely ineligible. And so I don't know that more than that was required to dispense with each of the representative claims. And I'm happy to talk about each of the patents. We can start with, for example, the 294, which was the patent Mr. Edmonds was last speaking about. And in that case, this patent is directed to data manipulation. And the Recognicorp decision from this court, as well as the Digitech decision.
Well, can we just go back to a second to the question of whether or not the case was properly resolved on the pleadings? The standard review is de novo, correct?
Correct.
For every issue. And so one of the key problems with your adversary's case from your point of view is his Second Amendment complaint is conclusory.
It is.
Allegations about technical improvements, which is where the he seems to be agreeing is the core of his case, which really pretty much goes to step two. So he says this is a technological advance, sufficient under the law cites a case. What more did he have to say to be non-conclusory?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that you can plead your way out of an eligible subject matter.
Well, no, I'm not talking. You might not be, you might, let's assume for purposes of argument that the panel agreed that the claims are drawn to abstract ideas. Okay. That doesn't end the case. He's got a shot at being able to prove that something unusual is happening. He has claimed there is. He has said so in his Second Amendment complaint, but his statement is being rejected by you and presumably by the court as being conclusory.
Correct.
What's the difference between what's conclusory about an allegation that there's a technological advance?
Well, Your Honor, I think that simply stating that without...
Put yourself in his shoes and just add to the, you know the technology here very well, add to the dress up the conclusory allegation of technological advance and tell me what else he should have said.
Well, Your Honor, I can't because I don't believe there is a technical advance. And to the extent that Mr. Edmonds believes
well,
there's...
Well, if you were on his side, sure you could.
Your Honor, I'm really at a loss because these patents are not the type of patents that display...
Well, he just made an argument with regard to the second algorithm in the 294. And he said the second algorithm is producing an image. It's producing something tangible. Under our case law, as you know, the production of something tangible may be material in step two analysis.
Your Honor, with the 294, you start with something tangible. You have a data set. Then you apply an algorithm. You get results. You apply another algorithm. You get another set of results. That's a data in, data out analysis that falls squarely in Recognicorp. There's nothing new about that. The algorithms that are disclosed.
You're pulling a different image. You basically are starting with, you know, I know the way it works. The software hunts through all the pictures, and it's first off, it's hunting through all for the faces. So it pulls them all up, and then it has a little piece, and it takes my face and runs it against all those other faces and tells me whether my face is in there.
Well, but
so
Your Honor,
it is producing my, when it produces my face, it's producing something new.
Well, Your Honor, to
as
the computer,
apart, right from the other step.
To the computer, it's just data. It starts with a data set, and that data set is image data.
Okay, but I mean, why shouldn't we be able to read his complaint to say that when he says that there's technological advance, that's what he was saying? I mean, if, for example, he had said in his Second Amendment complaint, when I get to this 294 patent, I'll concede for purposes of argument that it's abstract. Abstract idea, but I think the second algorithm saves it under the case law because it's producing this new image. Would that have been sufficient to survive a motion to dismiss on the pleading?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because I think that the judge is entitled to examine the allegation and determine whether or not there's merit to it. You can't just go and put anything you want in your complaint and have it be taken as true. The judge has to evaluate the statement, and if there's a conclusory statement that is not tied to any fact that's laid out in the patent, then I don't believe that the judge has to accept it.
Well, you were in essence saying you should have thrown out the pleadings under our law that deals with what has to be in a pleading to make it sufficient even to even to look to see what it is.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, we gave them a roadmap. You know, they filed a complaint. They filed a First Amendment complaint that related to the parties. We filed a motion to dismiss. And then they filed a Second Amendment complaint in an attempt to work around our motion to dismiss. So we gave them a roadmap of what to do. They did make changes to the complaint, but it just consisted of conclusory allegations. They didn't point to a specific technical advance. They just made a bunch of statements about the impact of the patent or, you know, what the judge should believe the patent does. But the claims themselves are directed to data analysis, and that subject matter is squarely within the line of cases from this court that say it's patent ineligible.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you on the question of whether or not step one is met. I think the game is at step two. And what I'm asking you is how much specificity does a plaintiff have to make in his first complaint or Second Amendment complaint to survive a motion to dismiss on the step two issue?
Well, I think that I think that a patent owner would need to say there is a technical advance and what the technical advance is, and that technical advance cannot be a conventional outcome using conventional generic software and hardware, which in all five of these patents, they're using conventional computer components. There's nothing new. There's no new computer functionality that's described. This is all computers or computer hardware and software manipulating data. Each of the five patents presented slightly differently. A few of them are drawn to user experience.
And you said as much in your papers filed and to support your motion to dismiss, right?
Correct, Your Honor. Yeah. Correct. So, Your Honor, with regard to the 294, I think the 294 patent in particular, if you examine the claim is drawn to data in, data out, as I said. The Recognicorp case, I think, treats that concept that you are not entitled to a patent on that. In fact, in this particular case, if you look at figure 3, it says if the algorithm doesn't give you the result you want, a human can just modify, can select the image themselves. So it is juxtaposing human intervention and the data analysis that the computer hardware is conducting. On the 064 patent, you know, in that case, it's the exact same issue. I think Your Honor already referred to this. It's basically using a computer as a tool to manage data. And the user could track that information themselves. In fact, paragraph 111, this is at appendix 293, that's in the second amended complaint, paragraph 111, MPV says, humans could compare what is in the remote storage device with what is on the camera. So that automation of a human memory task is squarely within those cases that this court has issued in that regard. With regard to the 762 patent, that is another case, and I would say, too, that the 064, 095, and 762 patent are really about improving the user's experience with the hardware. In fact, the 064 talks about the purpose of the invention is to alleviate a user's worry that they're going to be losing track of which photos have been deleted and which ones haven't. The 762 patent, likewise, talks about a user anxiety of being overwhelmed. That's at column 1, lines 38 to 40 of the 762 patent, by so many new features in the camera. So the purpose of the 762 patent is not to improve the camera or to improve its functionality. It's to improve the user's experience by reducing the number of features that a particular user is presented with at any given time. Everything that's in these patents, 064, 095, and 762, is all conventional. The 762, in addition, uses functional claiming to describe its, the last element of the representative claim 19 is programming the programmable memory. There's nothing there. That is definitely patent ineligible.
Do you think every step performed through an algorithm is abstract?
In general, Your Honor?
Yes.
I believe that the case law holds that algorithms themselves, the performance of an algorithm, is abstract. And whether you have, for example, two algorithms, as in the 294 or one, is irrelevant because you are performing math, and this goes back to the decision in Fluke, that mere mathematical calculations is not patent eligible. And the last
part depends on what it does, that's step two, right?
Well, it depends on what the claim says.
I mean, in the cases that where we've sustained a patent at step two over a step one determination that the patent was drawn to an abstract idea, there has been an algorithm driving the computer.
There has, but there's been some sort of technological improvement in the computer's function, and that's true.
That's what I mean. But I mean, so it's not the fact that you are driving, you're using an algorithm to give instructions to a machine doesn't fully invalidate
correct.
A patent. You,
Your Honor,
you always
correct.
Have to come to step two and ask what's going on.
Correct, Your Honor, and I apologize if I gave that impression. It's true that you could have a claim that is drawn to the use of an algorithm, but the use of the algorithm has to be providing something further. It has to be doing something to improve the functionality of the hardware on which it's running. And that is not what's present in any of these patents. That is what's present in the line of cases that this court has issued where you all have upheld patents as being patentable. claims as being patentable because there was some improvement in computer functionality. And the last patent, Your Honor, here, the 484, this patent, I think, is perhaps the easiest to dispose of. It is directly in line with the American Needle case, which we cited. And this is simply about selling. This is about using a kiosk to replace a clerk. And the patent itself talks about the stated objective of the patent is to provide an opportunity for retail customers to purchase more products. And it does so by presenting the retail customer with a product configuration that might appeal to them, and it does so using a kiosk. This is a do-it-on-a-computer type of case, this patent. So I think all five of these patents fall, as I said, squarely within the category of claims that are not making a functional improvement to the hardware on which the algorithm is running, on which the software is based. These are simply using a computer to automate a human activity or to use a computer as a tool. I'm happy to cede the rest of my time unless there are some questions.
Fine. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Edmonds, we'll give you 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Taking 2 points up front that my colleague made, so he characterized the 484 patent as just about selling, but that glosses over the 484 patent has modifying the user-supplied image, and the specification teaches an example of that. For example, if you're going to put something on a T-shirt, you would texture the image to mimic the texturing of the T-shirt and then put it on the T-shirt. Like a regular Photoshop was already, it's in the specification, that's conventional. Or if you put on a coffee mug that's 3D, you would take the user-supplied image and render that in space to where it would show up in the correct spatial arrangement of the coffee mug. So it is a technical solution. It's not just some type of advertising, as my friend said. With respect to the 762 patent, he characterized it as user experience. In the specification, it talked about that you could modify the user interface for somebody to try to make it easier. The 762 patent took a different tact. They're actually using software that's external to the camera to modify the firmware and disable features. So those features, it's not just a user experience. It's effectively a different camera for that user because the features that they don't want have now been disabled. And when it goes to another user, then the features that they want are now enabled and the ones they don't want are disabled. So it's a different camera. It's not just a user experience. Judge Clevenger asked about what more could MPV do than say it's inventive. And here's what MPV did in a second amended complaint and in its briefing with the district court and here too. It didn't just say this is inventive. What we did was we explained the conventional art, and this has all been pled, so these facts should be accepted as true. We explained the conventional art. We juxtaposed the solution with the conventional art. We pointed out what was inventive and what's unconventional about that. And you can't do any more than that on the pleadings, and that's exactly what we did, and that should be enough at the pleading stage to do that. So just so the court gets the, we talked about the 762 and 484. For the 294, this two-step process, and the point that my friend misses is that the second step is only analyzing the regions with face candidates. So you're saving a lot of processing, saving a lot of memory because you're only looking at certain small areas as opposed to, I think Judge Clevenger said, that you're familiar with the system where it would just scan the entire image looking for a face. That's what we're not doing here. We're narrowing it to just regions that might likely have a face and using the computational power just in those regions. And that's what's inventive and unconventional about it. With respect to the 484, we just talked about the 484. With respect to the Let me just talk briefly about the willfulness and the inducement allegations and the lack of leave to amend. The district court misunderstood the standard for willfulness, and that's been clarified in this court's recent opinion, SRI versus Cisco, September 28th of this year. That's been clarified. MPV pled that the infringement was clear, unmistakable, inexcusable, egregious. Clearly that pleading has been met. With respect to the inducement, the district court did not carefully read or just mistakenly characterize the inducement allegations. The district court's opinion is just incorrect. The things the district court says that weren't alleged were absolutely alleged. And those are in our brief, but specific intent was alleged. Usage by customers as infringing was alleged. That the instructions caused infringing behavior was alleged. The district court just respectfully got all that wrong. At a minimum, the district court should have granted leave to amend. And the district court's view was, well, I found they're ineligible, therefore amendment would be futile. But that's incorrect. I mean, we know from Atrix, that amendments can be made to address factual concerns. And the district court misunderstood how many times the first complaint that was amended to drop a party. And the district court seemed to think.
Some of this is not rebuttal, of course, but we understand your points.
Okay.
And your time has expired.
Thank you for your time, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted.